Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show. It's Monday, it's the 15th of July 2019. I hope you're all keeping very well and you've all had a great weekend. On today's show, we will be talking about health in the workplace. We'll also be talking about type 2 diabetes, blood pressure, and also towards the end of the show, we will be talking about antidepressants. And unusually today, I'm actually flying solo. I have no guests on the show this morning, but that does allow me to cover more subjects. So rather than the usual two that I cover on our normal shows, I can cover four today and give you lots more useful information. So a quick disclaimer before we start. The purpose of the Health Matters radio show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters that we cover and to inform you in ways that you might be able to improve your own health. But this is on the understanding that I'm not engaged in providing medical advice and the content of the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your general health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional. And all the information is provided for general information only. And please do your own research on the topics that we discuss. And the show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience and often my opinion. And I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. So that's that out the way. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, please search the Health Matters Radio Show and you can follow the show's Facebook feed and Facebook page. You'll be able to listen again to this show and all previous 65 shows I've done on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk, and also on iTunes. I have an iTunes podcast. Go to iTunes, go to podcasts, search the Health Matters Radio Show, and you can listen to this show and previous shows there too. So health in the workplace, it's a very important subject. If you're an employer, you need to listen to this. But equally, if you're an employee, there are some useful hints and tips that can help you to take control of your own health in your workplace. So at the moment, we have this condition called presenteeism. And basically, presenteeism affects UK businesses to quite a large degree. So presenteeism is essentially when an employee is at work, but they're not fully fit. So they might have mental health issues, they might have physical health issues, but basically they're not as productive as they could be. And at the last survey, there was a survey recently of 32,000 workers, and from that survey, they've estimated that presenteeism and sickness absence actually costs UK businesses around £77 billion a year. I think the last figure was about £600 per employee per year. So it's quite a lot of money compounded over time. So this productivity issue becomes because of either people being absent or people actually being at work because they feel under pressure to be at work because of work insecurity and general worries about that, about their position, where they will go to work, but they're not really fit to be at work. So this leads to underperformance. It can lead to a lot of other issues as well. And if they're not dealt with, that can become a problem, particularly for the employer, as things progress. So it's estimated that working hours missed by the average employee as a result of illness has fallen from 3.3 days to 2.7 days, but now more people are actually turning up when they are sick, and that's actually increased from 24.2 in 2016 to 27.7 now. So you put the 2.7 days a year when they're actually physically off, combined with the 27.7 days when they're in but shouldn't be in, and that equates to around £77 billion a year for the UK economy. So most of our working life, most of our working hours are spent at work. So our working environment is a really key area where we should be. It should be a big part of our health and our well-being. But we often struggle to find this balance between work life and home life. And essentially, a good work-life balance means that you have harmony between these different aspects of your life, where the benefits gained from one area can support and strengthen the other areas. And now, a work-life balance or work-life integration is a relatively new concept that people are beginning to get to grips with, and responsible employers are actually now trying to encourage and support. So in the UK, we work some of the longest hours of anyone in the developed countries. And we also compound that problem by spending less time looking after ourselves outside work. So working long hours can be bad for our health. It can increase stress, and it also can give us less time to spend on activities that we like, that we enjoy during our downtime, less time with families, less time for leisure. So it is a real, real big problem. Lots more people are working part-time. They're working in low-wage jobs, insecure jobs, which often means they have to work longer hours than they were planned, sometimes unpaid hours, sometimes unsociable hours, at times when they're not feeling 100%. And again, this can lead to this condition called presenteeism, but can also lead to general lack of productivity. So the employer's responsibility to ensure good health in the workplace. And on that note, I do run workshops called Change Your Life in 60 Minutes. So if there are employers out there that want to invest in an hour of their employees' time, get me on board, contact me, and I can come in for an hour and I can actually help to change the lives of your employees in as little as 60 minutes. But in addition to it becoming more of an employer's responsibility, as I mentioned earlier, it's the employee's responsibility as well to take control of their own health and well-being. Now, one of the biggest areas of concern is obviously stress in the workplace. Now, stress is a natural human response to a challenging or dangerous situation. And actually, a small amount of stress, such as working to a deadline, can actually be helpful. And it can actually increase our alertness, our energy, and our productivity. But this living on adrenaline can only be effective for a short time. If that continues for too long, it can interfere with our ability to cope with that stress. It can also drain our physical and mental resources, and it can have a massive effect on our physical and mental health, our relationships with our co-workers, our spouses, our partners, and it can have a real negative effect on every aspect of our life. So dealing with stress at work is important, and identifying the symptoms of stress is also important, and identifying them before it becomes too serious or it makes you seriously ill before you do something about it. So one of the most effective ways of dealing with stress is knowing how to prioritise your workload, to not take on more than you can handle, and also learning to say no, which is quite a skill. It does take some courage, but actually it's good for your own management of your own stress levels. So your work environment can also create work-related stress, and this is where the responsibility for the employer comes in. Because if you don't have a positive and supportive workplace, or if your employer doesn't understand and isn't supportive of people with perhaps mental health conditions such as anxiety, depression, or anxiety-related disorders, this can lead to a bad feeling in the workplace. And can also, at the extremes, can lead to cases of discrimination against the employees. So employers, it's a very serious situation. You need to take control of the health and well-being of your staff and control of your work environment. And for those employers out there that are doing that, I commend you. And for those of you that aren't doing that and perhaps see scope to improve, then this is the opportunity to do something about it and to look after your employees. Now, that, if stress isn't dealt with, that can lead to burnout, and this is severe physical, emotional, and mental exhaustion. This can lead to a feeling of detachment from work and other aspects of a person's life. They can become cynical. They can have serious reduced efficiency, and they can just lose interest in everything that they do. Burnout also spills over into a person's home life, so it can lead to this thing called compassion fatigue, where they just don't care about themselves, or they don't care about the health of others, or they can feel like they're simply going through the motions. And that can be a real problem for people in their health, or healthcare profession, you know, where they're looking after older people perhaps, or then in the nursing profession, where obviously compassion is integral to their work, but these individuals are they're often put under the most amount of pressure to perform. So burnout can be a very serious issue. Back pain can lead to a lot of other sickness absences. So back pain and back injury is often caused by lifting or handling objects at work incorrectly, perhaps having a poor posture at our workplace, our workstation, or maybe awkward twisting movements. So bending and reaching can cause back issues and muscle problems in the back. So if you're unsure about how to lift or how to sit properly at your work desk, your workstation, then please talk to your employer. They should be able to help you to put into place some good practices about how to lift objects properly if you're doing quite a manual job, or just simply how to have a good posture whilst you're sitting at your desk. RSI is another issue. Now, RSI is when you damage tissues in your body by repeating the same movement over and over again. So this is more likely to occur if you spend long periods of time at work without a break, or you sit in an uncomfortable chair, or you have a poorly arranged workstation. If you're using a mouse incorrectly or a keyboard incorrectly or any other handheld device, that can cause RSI. But also people that use muscles again and again, so people like factory line assembly workers, musicians, tailors, cleaners, they can often use the same, they go through the same motions day in, day out, hour in, hour out, and that can cause RSI. So if you think you're struggling with RSI, perhaps have a chat to your doctor and have a chat to your employer too. And if you sit for a long time in one place, lots of office workers struggle with health issues because they're just sitting at their desk all the time, then perhaps spend some time walking around. It's recommended that for every hour that you work, you should spend around 5 to 10 minutes away from your desk. You can also switch to a standing workstation. If you've got to talk to someone, get up and talk to them. Don't use the phone, don't use emails. Walk across the office and talk to them rather than just using technology. And if you're having meetings, have a standing meeting or a walk-in meeting instead, rather than have a meeting where you are stuck at a boardroom table, perhaps. And exercise is another thing that we can do at work because we don't spend enough time exercising, particularly in our spare time. So how can you possibly spend time exercising at work, I hear you ask? Well, if you live quite close, you might want to walk to work or cycle to work. And if you get on a bus, maybe get off a bus stop before or after your workplace and then walk to work for that, you know, that final part. I mentioned about walking to someone's desk rather than speaking to them by phone or sending them an email. And if you work in a place where you've got to go up in lifts, then perhaps use the stairs instead. If you're working on the 23rd floor, you might not want to walk 23 floors to your workplace, but maybe get off on the 21st or 22nd and walk the last flight or two. And also think about what you eat. We eat a lot of our calories, at least a third of our calories, while we're at work. And if we've got vending machines or we've got fast food restaurants nearby, they're not the healthiest choices when it comes to our dietary choices. So you might want to think about switching to healthier options, maybe eating a bit more fruit during the day, or perhaps taking in your own food, your own sandwiches perhaps that you make, or salads. So then we know what's in our food, and then obviously we've got that control where we have healthier choices. And again, a healthier diet can help us to cope much better because it affects our whole health, our mental health, as well as our physical health. So there you go, some tips in the workplace. As employees, you need to take control and you need to be accountable for your own health and well-being in the workplace. But also employers, you need to take control as well because it's your responsibility to ensure that your employees are given the healthiest workplace possible. And as I mentioned, employers, if you want to chat about the 60-minute workshop, then give me a shout, drop me a line, go to my website, and we can talk from there. So after the break, we are going to go on and talk about type 2 diabetes and how to spot the signs of undiagnosed type 2.
It's got leather seats. It's got a
That was Feeder and Buck Rogers. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, search the Health Matters Radio Show. And if you need to contact me, please do so through my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And you can listen to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website and on iTunes podcast. So for those of you that know me, you'll know that I have a passion about dealing with type 2 diabetes. Type 2 diabetes, I help people to manage the condition properly and potentially to put them into remission and just generally help them live a happier, healthier life, either with a condition if it's not reversible, or assist them to actually reverse it and come off medication altogether. But lots of people don't really understand about type 2, what it is and the problems it can cause. And more seriously, they don't actually realise that they sometimes have it, but they don't recognise the symptoms. So for the next 10 minutes, we'll talk about what diabetes is, or type 2 diabetes, and also how to spot some of the symptoms if you may have it but may not know that you've had it. And I'll explain more in a moment. So we have type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Okay, so type 1 is an autoimmune condition, generally comes on quite early on in life and comes on quite quickly. Type 2, however, is generally diet and lifestyle related, and can take up to 10 years to develop to a serious level, so it's quite insidious. People can live with the symptoms for up to a decade and not realise it. And in that 10 years, it can do a huge amount of damage. So around 90% of people with diabetes will have type 2, and only 10%, so only 1 in 10 people will have type 1. So we're going to focus on type 2 at the minute, because around 90% of people have type 2. It used to be called the middle-aged person's disease, because type 2 generally came on when you hit 40 to 50 years old. But now, because of the obesity crisis that we face and the poor dietary choices and the sugars and sweeteners that we have in our diet, particularly in the Western world, younger and younger people are now getting type 2 diabetes. In fact, it's not uncommon now for teenagers to develop type 2. 20, 30, 40 years ago, that was unheard of. And equally, there are some cases where children under 10 are developing type 2 diabetes. So it's quite scary. Now, there is a link between type 2 and obesity, and also high blood pressure and high cholesterol. However, that's not a hard and fast rule. I know some type 2 diabetics who weigh 10, 11 stone. So just because you are of a good weight doesn't mean that you are immune from getting type 2 diabetes. So do bear that in mind. But also bear in mind as well that because it is a lifestyle and dietary, it is lifestyle and dietary related, that therefore if we influence how we get it, we can also influence how we can avoid it as well. So it is completely preventable. So in 1996, there were 1.4 million type 2 diabetics, diagnosed type 2 diabetics. In 2005, there were 2.1 million, so it increased by about 700,000 in a decade. There are now around 4.5 million. So in the last 10 to 15 years, it's gone up by double, which is quite scary. But of that 4.5 million, only around 3.7, 3.8, 3.9 million are actually diagnosed. So it means that it's between 600,000 and 700,000 people, it's estimated, that have type 2 diabetes right now, but they don't know they've got it. And this is why in a moment we're going to talk about identifying the symptoms of undiagnosed type 2, because if you are a type 2 diabetic, trust me, you need to know about it and it needs to be dealt with unless it becomes really, really serious. It's estimated that there'll be over 5 million by 2025. There are 700 people every day around the world that are diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and worldwide there are between 400 to 500 million people diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And it causes a lot of complications. It can cause heart issues. I will come on to some of the damaging things that type 2 does in a moment. But it's estimated that between 50 and 80% of deaths in people who have diabetes have heart disease. So they die of heart disease, but the thing that caused the heart disease in over half the cases, was the type 2 diabetes. So type 2 diabetes is a killer, albeit indirectly, as we'll come on to in a moment. So let's look at these symptoms. And it's really important because you need to understand that if you can identify with one, two, maybe more of these symptoms, you should really go and get yourself checked out if you haven't been checked out recently by your doctor. Because if you have type 2 diabetes, you need to take action because it is a killer, as I mentioned. That said, if you can identify with some of these symptoms, it doesn't mean that you are type 2 by any stretch of the imagination. However, as I mentioned, if you haven't been checked out recently, it's worth actually getting it checked out, even if your doctor comes back and says your blood sugars are fine. So these are some of the symptoms of type 2 diabetes. Increased thirst, increased hunger, a dry mouth, going to the toilet a lot, especially at night, unexplained weight loss, itching down below. So if you get any sort of genital infections, bacterial infections, it's because the bacteria live off the high glucose levels that often people are urinating out. If you get constant fatigue or headaches, or you get blurred vision. Blurred vision is a real classic symptom. If you go to have your eyes tested, they will test for type 2 diabetes because it really affects your eyes in quite a significant way. But if you get intermittent blurred vision, then you should get it checked out because that can be the high blood sugar disrupting the lens of your eyes. And actually the high blood sugars can make the lens in your eye become swollen. If you have cuts and grazes that are now taking longer to heal, that can be a symptom of type 2 diabetes. So if you can identify with any of those areas, it doesn't mean that you are type 2. But if you can identify, it is worth getting checked out. Because as I mentioned, there could be anything up to 600,000 or 700,000 people listening to the show right now that have type 2, but don't know they've got type 2. Equally, it's estimated that there's another 12 million people who aren't type 2 diabetic now. If they don't change their diet and their lifestyle over the next decade, they will be type 2 diabetic. So we have a real problem in the UK where people are just unaware of the dangers. They're either on medication and they think they can't come off the medication, that type 2 can't be reversed. Or they have type 2 right now but haven't been diagnosed. Or they're going to get type 2 unless they change their diet and lifestyle. So it is a real problem. That's why I'm on my mission, my 100 million mission, to go and educate people and go and talk to people, talk to groups, do workshops to actually educate people about what type 2 diabetes is, how to spot the symptoms and how we can avoid it, and also how we can reduce the risk. And obviously changing our diet and our lifestyle massively reduces the risk. Cutting down on sugary drinks, artificial drinks, losing some body fat, some body weight if we're overweight, increasing our physical exercise, those sorts of things are the real basic things where we can reduce the risk of it. If we're not in the diabetic range or in the pre-diabetic range, we can reduce the risk of getting type 2 diabetes as we get older. But do remember that type 2 is much easier to miss because it develops much more slowly than type 1, okay? But if untreated, type 2 diabetes affects most of the major organs, particularly the heart, but it also affects our blood vessels, it affects our nerves, our eyes, our kidneys, and there is a massive link now between type 2 diabetes and dementia. And in fact, in some circles, dementia is being called type 3 diabetes, because of the link with sustained high blood sugars and the damage it does to the brain. So it's not just the damage it does here and now to our bodies, it's a long-term damage with obviously the potential to develop dementia as we age. It's a very serious condition. Please review your own health, look at your own health and see if you can identify with any of those symptoms. And if you can identify with, you know, one or more of those symptoms, then do have a chat with your doctor. If they give you the all clear, that's great, but they may not. You may be in those 600,000 people that have diabetes right now but don't realize it. And if you are in the diabetic range or pre-diabetic, or you are full-blown type 2 diabetic, then management, early diagnosis and management of the condition is absolutely essential. So after the break, we are going to be going on and talking about another health condition that often goes undiagnosed for a long period of time, which is blood pressure. But to take us there, we have Word Up, a classic from the 80s by Cameo. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil Da Silva. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, at Health Radio Show, and on Facebook, search the Health Matters Radio Show, and you can like the show's Facebook page, and you'll be able to listen again to this show and previous shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.com. .co.uk, and also on iTunes podcast. Go to iTunes and search the Health Matters Radio Show. So we spent the last 10 minutes speaking on talking about undiagnosed type 2 diabetes. There are three major conditions that go undetected for a long time until they don't. So at that point, you start getting symptoms. And it's at the point where you start getting symptoms that you've normally had these diseases, these illnesses for a long time. And in the time that they've remained under the radar and undiagnosed, they generally will do a lot of damage to the body. So at the point that you start getting symptoms, is a point that's not the point you've got the illness. It's the point that the body can't cope anymore. So we're covering two of the three major areas. So the first is high cholesterol, which you obviously need to have checked by your doctor. That requires a blood test. So high cholesterol goes undetected. High blood sugar goes undetected, i.e. type 2 diabetes. And the third is high blood pressure. And we're going to cover high blood pressure now for the next 5 or 10 minutes, because it's another one of these conditions that leads to serious heart disease, can lead to having strokes, it can lead to blindness, it can put a lot of damage or put a lot of pressure on the kidneys. But as I mentioned, it goes undiagnosed because we don't get the symptoms until we get the symptoms. And by the time we get the symptoms, normally we've had it a while and it's done a lot of damage to our body. So it's estimated that as many as 7 million people in the UK have undiagnosed high blood pressure. So they haven't had it checked by their doctor recently. They don't have a home testing kit. They're just living their lives completely oblivious because they're not having the symptoms. But just because they don't have the symptoms doesn't mean that it's not doing damage to the body. 7 million people is a huge amount of people. And the only way to know whether you've got high blood pressure, if you haven't got the symptoms, is to have it measured. Either have it measured by your doctor or by a good quality, because some of them are, the cheap ones are of dubious quality and it can give you a false reading, which can be even worse. If you get a good quality blood pressure kit, a monitoring system at home, normally spend upwards of £50, will give you a reasonably good and a well-branded one. Then obviously you can do your own blood pressure testing. If you have got high blood pressure, you can monitor it at home, which is perfect. So once you get to 40, my personal suggestion, my recommendation is to have your health checked at least every couple of years. Blood pressure, cholesterol, and obviously blood sugars, because those three will cause heart disease and cardiovascular issues as you get older. So what is blood pressure? Well, very simply, it's the pressure exerted by your heart. It's the pressure in the arteries. Excuse me. So these vessels cover carry blood from your heart to your brain and to the rest of your body. And you need a certain amount of pressure to get the blood around your body. So the pressure of the blood that flows through your arteries changes as your heart beats. So the pressure will be the highest when your heart is contracting and pumping blood around your body, and it will be at the lowest when the heart relaxes while it fills with blood before it pumps again. So high blood pressure, or hypertension as it's commonly known, is when your blood pressure is consistently higher than the recommended levels. And it's not normally something that you can feel or that you notice, but if it's left untreated over time, it can make your heart become enlarged. So your heart is like a muscle, and like any other muscle, the harder you work it, the tougher and bigger it becomes. And trust me, you don't want your heart becoming bigger and tougher than it needs to be. So when your heart becomes enlarged, it can make it less effective at pumping blood around the body, and can eventually lead to heart failure and heart attack. It also increases the risk of having a stroke as well, so it's quite serious. So it's not always a clear-cut explanation for the causes of high blood pressure, but these things can play a part. So if you're not physical enough, if you're not doing a lot of exercise or generally quite physically active, that can be a factor. If you're overweight or obese, or you have too much salt in your diet, those can be factors. If you regularly drink too much alcohol, that can be a cause of high blood pressure. And also, if you've got a family history of high blood pressure, that can be a factor as well. But even if you don't have high blood pressure, making some simple lifestyle changes, like with type 2 diabetes, can actually reduce the risk of you developing it as you get older. So how will you know if you've got high blood pressure? As I mentioned, if you go and have your blood pressure checked by your doctor, they'll be able to tell you what your blood pressure readings are. You can also get decent quality home units as well. And my suggestion would be, if you're going to have your blood pressure checked, why not have your blood glucose and your blood cholesterol checked at the same time? if you haven't had it done in the last couple of years. And then obviously you have peace of mind knowing that high cholesterol and high blood sugars are not a factor. Now, your doctor will give you a reading, okay? So you might hear them say, oh, it's 120 over 80 or 130 over 90 or, you know, 110 over 70, whatever it might be. So they give you two numbers. Most people don't know what those numbers mean. Essentially, the higher number is the number when your heart pumps and the lower number is when your heart is relaxed. So these are measured in mmHg, which means millimeters of mercury. So if the doctor says, oh, it's 120 over 80, essentially that means that the systolic, which is the higher number, is 120, and the diastolic, which is the lower number, is 80. So your blood pressure, unless your doctor tells you otherwise, your blood pressure should be under 140 over 90. So systolic of 140, diastolic of 90. Once you start going above those numbers, you're in the range of high blood pressure, and that leaves you at risk of coronary heart disease, angina, heart attack, stroke. And also, if you have diabetes or kidney disease, then your blood pressure should be slightly lower than that range. It's recommended around 130 over 80. So what can you do to reduce your blood pressure? Well, obviously, stress management is a big thing. We covered stress a bit earlier in the show today. But these lifestyle changes often can be quite simple to make. So a bit more physical activity, a bit more exercise. Lose some weight if you're carrying too much weight. Reduce the salt in your diet. Cut down on alcohol. Eat a balanced and healthy diet. Sometimes lifestyle changes can take us out of the danger range. Okay, so if your blood pressure is high and you're on medication, by putting some, under the advice of your doctor, of course, talk to your doctor first, but putting some simple lifestyle changes in place can reduce your blood pressure down to a point that perhaps even you might come off of the medication. But equally, if you're in the slightly higher range, or even if your blood pressure is normal, reducing the risk of it as you're getting older is actually quite important. So these simple lifestyle changes that we can make now can have huge effects on our well-being as we get older. So just remember, it goes undiagnosed for a long time. If you haven't had your blood pressure checked in recent times, maybe the last couple of years, perhaps have a well person check, talk to your doctor, and then maybe get your cholesterol checked and your blood glucose levels checked at the same time, because those are the three conditions that go undiagnosed for a long period, anything up to a decade. And then by the time you get the symptoms, if you've ignored them, or if you don't even realise you've got these, you know, one of these three conditions, they can do a huge amount of damage to the body. So we're going to take a quick music break again now. We're going to go on after the break to talk about antidepressants. But to take us there, we have a hit from, I think it was earlier this year actually, from Anne-Marie. I will always remember. And it's 2002.
The day you kissed my lips, light as a feather. And it went just like this. No, it's never been better than the summer of 2002. We were only 11, but acting like grown-ups, like we are in the present. Drinking from plastic cups, singing love is forever and never. Well, I guess that was true. Say, oops, I got 99 problems singing bye, bye, bye. Hold up, if you wanna go and take a ride with me, better hit me, baby, one more time. Paint a picture for you and me on the days when we were young. Singing off the top of both our lungs. Now we're under the covers. Fast forward. Say, oops, I got 99 problems.
of an old Mustang, where we sang songs with all our childhood friends. Oh, now, oops, I got 99 problems singing bye, bye, bye. Hold up, if you wanna go and take a ride with me, better hit me, baby, one more time.
You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. I hope you're all keeping well, and I hope you've all enjoyed the content of the show so far. Like I mentioned, don't often fly solo. I normally have guests on my show pretty much every week. But it's been a good opportunity this time to actually cover some more subjects. So we started off with health in the workplace and how employers and employees need to take control of their own health, physical and mental, in the workplace. We then went on to speak about undiagnosed type 2 diabetes and perhaps how you can look at your own health and perhaps identify potentially undiagnosed type 2 in yourself. And then also high blood pressure as well and the damage it can do and also the importance of having it checked out. So for the next 5 or 6 minutes, we are going to talk about antidepressants. So we live in a society where mental health issues are quite rightly coming to the fore. We spent a lot of time actually putting mental health issues much lower down the priority list than physical health issues. And actually, when we talk about mental health, everyone has mental health in the same way that everyone has physical health, okay? So people can have good mental health and they can be happy and positive and optimistic and buoyant. And equally, we can have not so good mental health where we struggle, where we can struggle with, you know, depression, anxiety. The mental health spectrum is quite wide, going down the route of, you know, at the far end, schizophrenia, psychosis. But depression, we can talk about depression for a few minutes because it's incredibly common. Depression and anxiety can be caused by many factors. It can be caused by our work. It can be caused by physical health issues. It can be caused by relationship problems. There are lots of reasons why we can become depressed and we can become anxious. And lots of people are turning to antidepressants to help them cope with these feelings of anxiety and also with depression. Now, with other medications, there are benefits to taking antidepressants, and there are also risks as well. And the interesting thing with antidepressants is, as I mentioned, they're incredibly common in the treatment for depression and anxiety, and they can help, but sometimes they're not enough on their own. Lots of people and some people that I know that are taking antidepressants find that they feel better faster with a combination of taking the antidepressants, but also with some psychological therapy as well. So in terms of the benefits of antidepressants, yes, they can help to improve your mood. If you've lost interest in activities that you've once enjoyed, or you're struggling with relationships, or generally you have those constant feelings of feeling down, then they can boost your mood. They can also help to improve your sleep, your thinking, your concentration levels as well. They can also help people with anxiety-related disorders, like generalized anxiety disorder, or GAD. It can also help with eating disorders as well. It can help with obsessive-compulsive disorder, OCD. And it can also help with post-traumatic stress disorder as well, PTSD. And people associate PTSD with people that were serving in the forces. But equally, PTSD can be caused from any stressful or traumatic experience in our life. And so PTSD, again, is becoming more and more common as people are recognising the symptoms. So antidepressants don't help everyone that takes them, but they are more likely to help people with moderate to severe depression than those with mild depression. And we'll come on to some alternatives to antidepressants if you're suffering with mild depression in a moment. So like I mentioned, there are benefits to taking antidepressants, and there are also some side effects to taking them as well. Now, many people that take antidepressants don't experience side effects, and the side effects do differ between different brands, different types, and obviously different strengths of antidepressants. But some of the side effects from taking antidepressants can be weight gain, it can be nausea, it can be headaches, you can get a dry mouth, you can have difficulty sleeping, and also antidepressants can cause sexual dysfunction as well. So these are things that you need to be aware of. Like all medications, you should read the instruction leaflet that comes in the box that many people disregard. Because if you are suffering with any of those symptoms, you should talk to your doctor. Now, generally speaking, people will start to feel better on antidepressants after 2 to 4 weeks, but it can actually take between 6 and 8 weeks to feel the full effects. If you are struggling with side effects, again, talk to your GP, but many of those side effects do go away after a couple of weeks. But it's important to talk to your doctor if you are taking any other medication with the antidepressants. Also, ask your doctor if the antidepressant that you've been given is affected by food, because if you take with food, they can limit the effectiveness of the antidepressant. Make sure that you store your medication away from children. Store them in the box in a safe place. Don't share your antidepressants. Indeed, don't share any medication with other people. Take the recommended dose, and equally continue to take the medication as advised by your doctor, even if you start feeling better. Finish the course if that's what they tell you to do. If you're drinking alcohol, you should cut down and stop, because alcohol can reduce the benefits of antidepressants, because alcohol is a depressant. And in some cases, that can become quite dangerous. And also, if you stop taking antidepressants suddenly, that can cause problems. So if you're getting some side effects and you think, well, I'm not going to take these anymore, you need to talk to your doctor. Okay, with any medication, talk to your doctor first. They may be able to advise you, or they may switch you to a different brand of antidepressants. And the goal is, if you're going to stay on antidepressants, is to find that treatment that works for you. Some antidepressants don't work for particular people, and your doctor can help you find the right one that's right for you. So what are alternative treatments for depression and anxiety? Well, some people do feel better with psychological therapies alone. Other people will use psychological therapies in conjunction with antidepressants to get them back on track. And there are many types of different psychological therapies. The most common is cognitive behavioural therapy, so CBT. And that therapy helps to identify and change your negative thoughts. Other types of therapy aim to get you to accept your thoughts and environment in a non-judgmental way, or they can help you to change your patterns of behaviour that are causing the problem and are not helpful to you. So talk to your doctor about options for treatment. You might be eligible for help, and they may be able to point you in the right direction, either as an alternative to taking antidepressants or in conjunction with the antidepressants that are prescribed to you. But other things that can help your general mood, your feelings, your anxiety levels, obviously things like exercise. We've covered exercise already today in relation to high blood pressure, in relation to health in the workplace, and also in relation to type 2 diabetes. But exercise is seriously underrated. It can help to improve your mental condition, your mental state of mind as well. It can improve your mood and your self-esteem, as well as reducing the risk of physical problems like weight gain and also other health issues as well. If you're smoking, then cutting down and quitting smoking can help to reduce depression. It can also help to reduce anxiety and stress, and it can help to improve your mood. And the big one is relaxation. Take some you time. Take some time out. You know, if you need guided meditation, there are some great apps available on the on iOS and the Android store that can help you just to find 5 or 10 minutes a day just to relax and to chill out. And also that can really help those symptoms of depression. So that's it. How quickly the hour goes. I hope you find the show. You found the show interesting today. Talking about health in the workplace, high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and also depression and antidepressants, and how you can help yourself with those as well. So a quick reminder of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. If you want to make contact with me for any reason, either personally or if you're an employer and want to talk about the workshops, then please do so through my website. If you want to come on as a guest and talk about what you do in your business, then please contact me via my website and we'll see about getting you on as a guest on a future show. And if you'd like to contact me via social media, drop me a tweet, ask me a question, then please do so at Health Radio Show on Twitter. So after the last song, we have the Channel Radio News and Weather. I hope you have a great week ahead. Stay happy, stay healthy, and I will catch you again at the same time next Monday.
Is a bloom shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck.